All right, you're back in the DFSR for our week 11 game by game NFL podcast. This is James Davis, and that's
Chris Terrell.
Yeah, and that's right. We don't have our fancy, flashy frontman, Doug Norrie. He is taking the week off to go out to Delaware to go to a house with no internet. So I hope, Doug, you're out there and listening and having a great time without us. Chris and I will, we're not the flashy frontman, but we are the rock solid bassist and drummer of DFSR. So hopefully we can put together a pretty solid game by game podcast. It is a little intimidating. Doug is normally the guy who goes extra deep and sets up this whole podcast, but I think we're pretty well set up. What do you think, Chris?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like sometimes you got to get that drummer and you know that that bass guitarist. They can get in there and they can sing too. So if the you know if the voice goes down, the lead singer, they can definitely jump in and pull it all together and make a good concert out of it.
Exactly. And this is like my show where I have my big solo and I'm going to play it for like a little bit too long just because it's finally my time to flex. And, you know, I always thought I was ready for the bigger role. So let's see how we do. As always, you can head on over to dfsr.com/deals. That'll give you our podcast only listeners discount. So you get a free 7-day trial to our projection system. So that'll cover you at this point for like 2 weeks of NFL and a whole bunch of slates of NBA in the meantime, and it will also give you a $5 discount in the long term if you do wind up staying on with us. So that's just $24.95 a month for all the sports that we cover. That'll get you access to the premium articles Chris and Casey have been writing this season. That'll get you access to our NBA system, NFL, and the NHL. Well, it's not an optimizer, but all of our NHL projections as well. So check it out, dfsr.com/deals. Chris, let's just jump right in. We got the first game, 1 o'clock game. Dallas heads in to go up against Atlanta. These are two rather strange teams in my estimation. Why don't we start with the home team? Atlanta, we have Sanu. He's kind of questionable right now. If he winds up being out, maybe we get a little bit of extra value on Ridley. You know, we've written up Julio Jones as even cash game viable over the last couple weeks. Austin Hooper coming off another one of these lightning strike good games where he'll go from 3 targets up to 11 targets, back down to 2, up to 12. What are we seeing on the Falcons side of the ball for starters this week?
Yeah, looking at the Falcons, I've kind of broke down them playing at home, and in their 5 home games, they're averaging about 32.2 points per game. So they've been very high scoring at home. So I suspect in this game, Dallas is going to have to play up to Atlanta's pace. I'm kind of seeing it that way. So I do like Julio Jones. He's been just red hot. He's had 100-plus yard games in 4 straight in 5 of his last 6. He's finally scored a touchdown, and it's happened in 2 straight. So it's kind of like the old adage, once one comes, you know, it just they're all just going to start coming after that. So really like Julio here, paying up for him this week. Matt Ryan definitely been there, the 300-plus yard games. He's been putting up big points. I do like Hooper on the tight end. Like, tight end's a very tough position this week.
Yes.
Just because there's a lot of emphasis, it seems, on, you know, paying up for running back, because after the top running backs, it really falls off to guys that are maybe, you know, there's not as many opportunities this week of guys stepping in. So paying up for running back really seems like something to go for this week. Me and Doug talked about that yesterday. But then Austin Hooper is one of the tight ends that I like going to. He's, you know, he's been up and down. Like, he'll have these weeks, like, he'll get 3 or 4 targets, but then, boom, he'll have those weeks where he's getting, you know, 10-plus targets.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And a lot of those come in the red zone. So I really like that, his touchdown upside there, just because Matt Ryan likes to, you know, focus on him once they get inside that red zone.
Yeah, right on. And I think with Hooper, you know, at his current price point, $6,000, it could be on the higher end. Like, if you do get those 3 target weeks, you'll obviously be pretty disappointed. But the thing about tight end is, unless you're going to pay up for someone like Ertz or, you know, Kelsey's not even on this slate, unless you're going to pay up for one of those guys, you're just rolling the dice anyway, right? Like, I'm sure we'll talk about some of these other guys as the podcast goes along, but, like, if you have to pay a little bit more for Hooper over Jordan Reed or something, doesn't that just feel better? He's got like a better quarterback. He's got better options around him. Yeah, I think you could see some definite ownership on Hooper this week, assuming we can make the money work. After that, you didn't bring up the running game, and probably for good reason. Coleman and Smith are just kind of splitting touches right now. Freeman's on the IR, but it just hasn't created that level of, you know, opportunity for any of these guys. I think they've gone into kind of this classic running back by committee basis where Smith is seeing a lot of the targets and Coleman's seeing a lot of the carries. And ultimately, the Falcons are just a team that would prefer to pass anyway. Let's swap over to Dallas, because Dallas has one of these running backs that you're talking about, these big money running backs that could see a lot of ownership and potentially a lot of production. And that's your boy Zeke, Chris, because Zeke comes out last week against Philly, marches into Philadelphia, puts up 187 yards, 2 touchdowns, touched the ball 25 times total, including 7 targets in the passing game. Is he one of the guys on the short list in terms of running backs you're looking to play this week? I didn't happen to catch the Cash Game podcast yesterday, but he's certainly up there for me right now.
Yeah, he's my number one running back this week. Nice. Atlanta's just been absolutely brutal against the running back, especially in the passing game. They've allowed the second most receiving yards to running backs. So Zeke kind of does it all. It doesn't really matter the game flow. If they're down, they're going to pass to him. They could throw him those screen passes and stuff and over the middle. And if they're up, they're just going to feed him the ball running. So he's definitely one that I'm paying up for this week. Probably, you know, cash games, he's a lock for me, be playing him. But in GPPs, I'm going to have a lot of them too, just because he's a little bit cheaper, especially on DraftKings, than Barkley and Gordon. So definitely looking to him. And then you've got Alvin Kamara, who's more expensive than all of that group.
Right.
So Elliott's definitely there for me this week against Atlanta. Awesome matchup.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I'm absolutely right there with you. The passing game in Dallas, I find this a little bit interesting here. Of course, the big name trade, Amari Cooper joins the team last week, gets targeted 10 times for 6 catches. I suspect you'll see pretty reasonable ownership on him this week, just because you do have a lot of incentive to pay up, definitely at running back, possibly at tight end as well, if you want to go in the direction of Ertz. And these mid $6,000 receivers just open up a lot of value. But after him, and I suspect you probably talked about him on the Cash Game podcast too, after him, though, I'm not seeing a whole lot else. Like, in a lot of ways, Dallas, they kind of look like one of these classic, we're just going to pass to everyone, so we're kind of passing to no one teams. I mean, Dak has been reasonable at this price point, probably not a cash game play given that you can get safety elsewhere. Is there anything else on Dallas you're seeing here before we move on?
Not really looking at Dak so much, but yeah, definitely like pairing Cooper and Elliott together. May seem crazy, but since Cooper's come in, I mean, he's got 18 targets. I think he's only caught 11 of those, but he's got 133 yards in those two games with a touchdown. It just seems like, you know, from what they give away for him, they want to really feed him the ball. So he's definitely in play for me in cash games. And, you know, just his price point, it's definitely going to go up after this week, I feel, going down the stretch. I think he's on DraftKings especially going to be in that 6 to 65 range, and he's 5,400 this week. So at that price, I'll definitely consider running him and Zeke out there together, because that's pretty much your whole Dallas offense right there. Pretty much covers all the touchdowns. Yeah. And pretty much, you know, I'd say about 75% of the yards in that team. So
classic DFSR last words right there coming out of Chris. That's a I feel like I'm just back on the podcast with Doug. Someone's telling me that there's two guys that are going to get the whole team's offense, and then you won't probably send me these texts, but Doug will send me the text, like, you know, let me just pick out a good guy here. Jeff Swaim with the touchdown, Vulture Zeke, such a, this is just what happened to us with Jack Doyle last week. So I'm just already,
well, I'll text you for sure.
Okay, good. You have my number. You can certainly reach out. Okay. I think that game's pretty well covered then. So let's slide on over to the Houston Washington game. Texans head in to Washington to play against the Redskins. This game's got a pretty low total, you know, kind of two generally unexciting offenses, starting with the home team. I mean, you'll probably see some cash game ownership out of guys like Jordan Reed, just because tight end is so abysmal. Some people in our chat are going to want to think about Adrian Peterson, just because, you know, claims are that he's feeling as healthy as ever. He touched the ball 21 times last game. But man, how excited can I really get about a team that has Alex Smith under center right now?
Yeah, I'm not really excited about this game at all. Like, the line has dropped from open, went from 43 down to 42, with Houston going up a half point in favorites, or 3-point favorites now on the road. So I'm not really looking at a whole bunch from this game, you know, GPP or cash. I do like Jordan Reed's price. He's kind of underwhelmed coming off a season full of injuries. He's averaging 6.6 targets per game. But it just, the production hasn't been there. But like I said, the price is what stands out this week when you're trying to pay up for running back. Even if you're paying up for one wide receiver with those running backs, he's at a season low on DraftKings and a second lowest point on FanDuel. So he's definitely in consideration. I think he will, because of that, just the way people are going to construct their lineups, that, you know, he's going to garner some ownership, which can be scary. I like it more for cash, and I'd probably pivot off him for GPPs.
Yeah, I'm concerned about Reed, honestly. Like, the total lack of playmaking ability. I mean, the guy has gotten 24 targets in the last 3 weeks, and he's basically turned that into just over 100 yards. Like, no touchdowns, of course. The, you know, having Alex Smith throw to you means that, and, you know, we've talked about this in terms of other teams too, but, like, so take it, the Bengals, you know, AJ Green goes out, and on paper, it creates a lot of opportunity, but it also makes defenses be able to target on the guys that are left over, like Tyler Boyd. I feel like Alex Smith has that effect on a whole passing offense, because if Alex Smith is your quarterback, it just means you don't need to respect the deep ball as much, right? And so guys like Reed, who, you know, might be used to making plays underneath with, say, Kirk Cousins or something, there's just a lot less room to do that. Defenses just don't need to respect the long ball at all here, and I think that creates problems for him. So, yeah, I'm going to probably, like, if he winds up in my cash game lineups, I don't think I would cross him out and start over, but the fact that he's coming off of two lackluster games in spite of two great matchups with Atlanta and Tampa Bay certainly has me concerned. So let's head on over to Houston. I mean, we've played Watson plenty of times over the course of his career. He's definitely nothing like a high price point right now. I don't think you want to touch the running game here, but the passing game has a lot of little interesting nuggets right now. Hopkins coming off a game where he played all but one of the Texans, 62 snaps. He's still pretty expensive, but he's limited in practice during the week with this foot thing. You also have the potential return of your buddy Kiki Kute, whose name I'll never be able to pronounce correctly. What do we make of the Texans offense right now? Is there anything that we can kind of sink our teeth into here? Because on paper, there should be a decent amount of value opened up. And these guys are not at the higher price points that we have paid for them in the past. Are we liking any Texans right now?
Yeah, like, I agree with you with not targeting the run game. Washington's a top five defense against the run this year, allowing just over 90 yards per game. So that's, I think there's only six teams that have allowed under 100 yards per game so far this year. But I do like the passing game. They do rank 25th in passing yards per game given up. So for GPPs, I definitely like pairing Watson with Hopkins. I mean, Hopkins seems like he's questionable every single week, and then he comes out and puts up a 100-yard game and a touchdown. Like, he scored a touchdown in four straight and five of his last six games. So he's got that huge, huge upside. And I think that questionable tag does help sometimes keep people away from him, especially with guys like Julio Jones on the slate this week, kind of in that same price range. He's actually a little bit more expensive, but I still think a little more ownership may go Julio's way this week in that high-scoring game.
Oh, definitely.
So I do like going to Hopkins, but Kute I've kind of been off of. You know, Demaryius Thomas. Those are really the only two guys that I'm looking at this week.
Yeah, Thomas only three targets last week. You know, it makes sense that they would take time to try to ease him into the offense here, but early returns have been that he's probably just worth the $5,600 price tag that he's saddled with right now. An interesting guy, I still think, for big tournaments, just because he obviously has that big playmaking ability. He can go off, but you just probably don't need to force it for cash. Let's head on over to the Cincinnati-Baltimore game, another 1 o'clock game. Cincinnati heads into Baltimore. Right now, this game, Chris, has no line because of just incredible uncertainty on both sides of the ball. So in no short order, or no specific order, Lamar Jackson missed practice. There's still buzz that there's potential for RG3 to get the start here, even though kind of common sense would have told you that with RG3 being inactive for the whole season, that he wouldn't just jump right into the first team reps and then the starting lineup. But right now there's still considerable buzz that could be the case. I think just the quarterback uncertainty in general probably makes the rest of the Ravens offense kind of a total crap show, we'll call it. And then the Bengals side, you have no shortage of questionable stuff as well. I mean, Green questionable with a toe. He didn't practice, I believe, on Thursday, but there's some chance he returns here, even though it seems like it's kind of a long shot. He's definitely not listed as out. Mixon was limited in practice on Thursday as well. You know, his potential absence could open up stuff for Giovanni Bernard. It is a 1 o'clock game, so we'll probably know prior to kickoff, what exactly is going to happen here. But is there a whole lot of great analysis we can provide given the amount of uncertainty right now?
It's an absolute mess, this game right now, trying to analyze who's going to get, you know, touches or target share in this game. If A.J. Green's back, I think that helps Tyler Boyd. I mean, he runs out of the slot. And when Green takes away a lot of the coverage on looking at the defensive side of things, and that's really opened up Boyd. When Green's out, you know, teams can really square in on Boyd and, you know, take away, you know, his upside that we've seen, or even his floor that we've seen. So I don't like Boyd with Green out, but Green coming back, you know, they may just use him as like a decoy, I guess, you know, like that 3 to 5 target type thing, just to maybe help Boyd a little bit. But overall, I do like Giovanni Bernard at his price point if Mixon is going to be out, because he has shown when Mixon was out that he can provide value. Other than that, I do like Lamar Jackson if he does get the start. It is very risky. I know Doug liked him in cash games. He wrote him up in the cash game article. I don't think I could go that way in cash, especially on FanDuel at his price, just because we've only seen him, like, he's had, I think, like 12 pass attempts this entire year. He does have that rushing upside, which we talked about yesterday, but for GPPs, I definitely like it. He seems like he's got a, you know, a pretty big arm. I like Willie Snead, you know, over Crabtree. Snead's cheapest out of those guys. John Brown's, he's kind of out for me. But overall, it's just kind of a mess. And we're pretty much going to have to wait till Sunday morning to see what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I think that's the right answer. I'm higher on Jackson for cash games than you are. Even RG3, frankly. I think both of them being running quarterbacks, very, very cheap price points means the floor is just higher than it would be for a normal quarterback. And at least Jackson, you know, it's a very limited sample size. But he's shown flashes, I think, enough that we could probably see pretty considerable ownership just because, again, money matters right now. And if you can get a saving somewhere, you know, you potentially even build in some upside, I think you'll see a lot of people take that on. Okay, so yeah, the big news from this one, just wait till Sunday morning. Unfortunately, that's the best advice we can give you. Like I mentioned, if Mixon winds up being out, you'll probably see Giovanni Bernard be a cash game play immediately. Okay,
question
so Tennessee
for you
had...
before we move on. If you had to guess, what do you think? Let's just go ahead and say that Lamar Jackson gets the start. AJ Green's going to play. What would you think the line's going to be set at when they come out? Not so much who's going to be favored, but what do you think the over-under is going to be in this game? I kind of have a feeling it's like a 44.5 type game.
Like yeah, you're right. It'll be a low-scoring one. I'm not great at picking football lines. That's not, you know, I just not my thing for the most part. But yes, this will be one of the lower games on the slate. I mean, Baltimore with a totally unknown quarterback, you can't pencil them in for any sort of big game. Right. And Cincinnati with their, you know, even with AJ Green back, like I would have questions as to whether he was just going to be a decoy. Baltimore, pretty solid defense. Yeah, this isn't a game you necessarily just want to go crazy on. Regardless of the news, the only reason you would want to play probably anyone from this game is just a price and opportunity mismatch, right? Like if you can get a backup running back at a cheap price point, or maybe you get Tyler Boyd at a cheaper price than he had been, because you think AJ Green returning opens up a little bit more for him. It would be something like that. But no, generally speaking, this is not a game to be too excited about. So Tennessee heads in to play Indianapolis. This game right now is another one that has potential fantasy implications, even though you have two sort of weird teams right now. Let's go back to the home team again. Andrew Luck, Chris, has quietly been just pretty good. You know, I know he's not maybe throwing the deep ball. He's not as flashy as he's been in past seasons. But right now we're on six straight weeks where Andrew Luck has had 22 fantasy points. He's averaging 22 fantasy points on the season. He's been solid, but the lack of the big playmaking ability has kept him away from cash game ownership. At what point do we just say, okay, Luck is a different guy, but maybe it was his head, not his arm all along, that made him a good fantasy play? This game's got a pretty reasonable total at 49. Are you seeing anything from the Colts side that we can run here?
Yeah, I definitely like Luck in this matchup. Just kind of looking at the, you know, fantasy points against and stuff like that. Indy. Tennessee's been, I think they rank 25th, 26th against wide receivers, so they're fourth against quarterbacks, which kind of seems weird. It's more of a pass rush type thing for Tennessee. But yeah, like you said, Luck has been super consistent. And not only those fantasy points have come a couple weeks from yards and then other weeks from touchdowns. He's thrown three or more touchdowns in those five straight games, six straight games as well. So, I mean, that's just amazing production coming out of him. And with T.Y. Hilton back to full strength, I think pairing those two makes a lot of sense. And then what gets me... what I'm looking at from the tight end side of things is Doyle's more of the cash game play for me. He seems, well, he only got three targets last week, but the week before he was 6 out of 7 in his return. But from earlier in the season, when Eric Ebron had the touchdown upside and they targeted him quite a bit in the red zone, I think he had touchdowns in four of his first five games. He did better when Jack Doyle was in there because Doyle would run out of the tight end slot and then you'd see Eric Ebron, they'd flex him out kind of into the slot type thing and get him out there against, say, like a safety or a linebacker, and he was exposing those matchups. So I definitely like Ebron here for touchdown upside. Not for cash by any means, but definitely for GPP upside.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to play a tight end from the Colts, I'm definitely going to play Doyle, probably on either side, honestly, just because of the snap counts. You know, Doyle last week, he played 48 of their 55 offensive snaps. Ebron played just 21 snaps, and I get that, you know, he's a dynamic player. He's got serious playmaking ability, and obviously if he's going to play 21 snaps but turn that into three receptions and two touchdowns, like, you know, the guy obviously has upside, especially if Indy just decides, hey, why don't we just leave this guy out there? He's like awesome. Like that's always going to be a risk when you're going to run them. I'm not sure I want to roll it back on Doyle. I am pretty concerned about the overall target share in spite of playing those snaps. I'm concerned that Indy had three touchdowns to tight ends, and two went to Ebron and one went to Mo Alley-Cox. It just seems like for whatever reason, they're just not viewing Doyle as that red zone guy, and that's just going to really limit a tight end's floor and ceiling, frankly, because so much of being a tight end in this league, in the modern NFL, is not about moving the chains. It's about occasionally punching in a touchdown. And not that you can rule that out for Doyle, but last week certainly wouldn't have inspired any confidence. Still do like the passing game. I think, you know, Indy just doesn't want to trust the run. Marlon Mack had those two pretty solid weeks, but coming back against Jacksonville last week, just 14 touches for 38 yards. I suspect you'll see Indy stick with, and Tennessee, a tough running defense as well now, two seasons in a row. I suspect you'll see Indy stick with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, and go back to the passing game. But speaking of Tennessee, they had two players who were cash game relevant last week, one of whom was more than a 60% start in Deion Lewis. The guy goes out there, touches the ball 22 times, turns it into just 68 yards, and I would say was a monumental disappointment for fantasy owners everywhere. But at 5,900, Chris, this guy, like, he still touched the ball 22 times, right? And you're running up this game with a 1.5-point spread. You'd have to think that if he was able to get that many touches last week, that he's probably a favorite to touch the ball 18 to 20 times here. Is 5,900 too cheap a price? Like, do we have to roll it back with Lewis here, or can we get away from it somehow?
I'm not really excited about Lewis, but I get that the opportunity is there. I mean, if he's touching the ball 20 plus times, that makes a lot of sense that, you know, he's going to break one or two here, you know, get that big reception, or, you know, even get in the end zone, which is what we like to see. And Indy hasn't been that great against running back, 21st in fantasy points against the position. So it's definitely there, but I just find myself every week, like, is it Derrick Henry? Is it Deion Lewis?
Yeah.
If one of them was out, I would be like 100% on, you know, one of them, just because Indy seems like a team they want to be smash mouth like that. But without it, they're, you know, I would stick them in GPPs only, and I do favor Lewis over Henry on a week-to-week basis. But it's, for me, it's more of the passing game I'm looking at with Marcus Mariota. He's, you know, he's really come around lately. He's had some good games. And then his wide receiver, the rookie from last year, Corey Davis, coming out of their bye, he's got 10 targets in each of the last 2 weeks.
Oh, I love Davis,
Caught 13 of them and had a huge game last week, 125 yards and a touchdown against the Patriots. So I definitely like going back to him again this week. I think a lot of people will chase those points, so I think his ownership might be up there. But the price is nice at 5,600 on DraftKings, and I believe he
62
is,
on FanDuel, yeah.
Yeah, so still not that bad, kind of right there in that mid-range, and that's kind of the range that we're looking to target, you know, if we're going up at running backs. So definitely that's
I really like Corey Davis. I think he'll be a cash game lock for a lot of people, and I guess I'm a little higher on Deion Lewis. I'm very concerned that Henry had the two touchdowns, and the fact that Henry had 11 attempts also, you know, that game just wound up being totally crazy. Tennessee, of course, you know, runs up the big lead, and who knows what the plan was initially or whatever. I bet Tennessee probably didn't have it in their mind that they were going to get the opportunity to run the ball 31 times. And so they may have been caught a little bit unawares. Regardless of what the line is here, I don't think that sort of thing is in play. But yeah, you're probably right. It's ultimately pretty speculative. Anytime you see a running back only get 2/3 of his team's carries, you got to be pretty confident that there are a lot of more carries coming, at a relatively cheap price point, especially if you're not the goal line back. Okay, so let's head on over to Carolina at Detroit. This game, another one with some pretty interesting fantasy implications here. Right now, Marvin Jones Jr., he missed Thursday's practice, and or at least the portion that was open to the media. This has a lot of people speculating that Kenny Golladay will be in line for another double-digit target week. He was excellent last week, hauling in 13 targets, scored that touchdown. Obviously, Golden Tate is already out of the picture. And after Golladay, like, I maybe would be a little bit more concerned if it seems like there was anyone else knocking on the door, but it was literally just like one target to every other guy who was out there, like three targets to some random tight end, three targets to Luke Wilson, to Michael Roberts. Like, it seems like Stafford. Yeah, exactly. It seems like Stafford without Marvin Jones is going to need to lean on Golladay quite a bit. And Golladay, I think, you know, just in that same Corey Davis sort of realm, could see huge. I mean, topping 60% cash game ownership. So I think he's probably a pretty straightforward one. But is there anything else on the Detroit side that you think we can play here?
Yeah, I think the matchup is good for the passing game for Detroit here this week. So I like Stafford in the passing game, whether Marvin Jones is in there or not. He didn't practice Wednesday either, so even if he's in there, I don't think he's going to be 100%. And it doesn't really scare me. And me and Doug kind of discussed it yesterday. The Minnesota game where he only got four targets, I'm not really concerned about that whatsoever, because that was kind of a weird one where Minnesota got 10 sacks and Stafford had absolutely no time to throw.
He was on his back the whole game.
So I think that 8 to 12 targets is kind of like his floor going forward. I think it makes sense to get Golladay in there. other than that, there's not a whole lot on, you know, on that team for the passing game that I really like whatsoever. I do like Kerryon Johnson. Theo Riddick, if you want to go real cheap, if you think, you know, maybe the game flow, which I do, Carolina is probably the better team here, going to probably, you know, get out to the lead. And if that's the case, Theo Riddick's going to get his targets. I mean, he's at 15 in the last 2 weeks, and he's their receiving. Kerryon Johnson hasn't really got a bunch of targets. They really want to keep Theo Riddick involved. So I think on DraftKings, at least, Theo Riddick is there for a punt. Running back, but Kerryon Johnson's the guy that we should really be concentrated on. He's really become the bell cow back lately.
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson, I think, is actually pretty interesting here. I like that he actually got the 6 targets last week, yeah. 5 the week before that, and 8 before, the week before that. It shows me that they're basically just playing Riddick as a wide receiver, whatever he's listed as on FanDuel and DraftKings, and it means that Kerryon Johnson operating more in that 3-down back sort of territory, or at least getting 3-down back levels of touches. 20 total touches in that Chicago game. Still very, very cheap. And I think a very, especially with the 2 touchdowns, very interesting big tournament play for me at a really low price point. Moving over to Carolina, another kind of weird team here. Right now, it looks like to me that Cam and McCaffrey are the playable options here. McCaffrey, he was excellent against Pittsburgh, getting it done in all phases, punching in 3 touchdowns, over 138 yards. Only had 19 touches, but still back-to-back 30 fantasy point weeks for him, looking every bit worth the $8,600 price tag. And Newton strikes me as sort of the classic naked quarterback, where you don't, I mean, you can play him alongside of Christian McCaffrey, but outside of that, like, I don't see a whole lot else in the passing game to get excited about. But do you see anything else you like on Carolina, or is that pretty much a good summary?
No, that's a pretty good summary. Like, Cam's touchdown upside has really gone down lately, which scares me a little bit about running him. I was on him early in the season because he was their, you know, they get down inside the 5, and he's the guy that's running it in the end zone. Well, McCaffrey's got seven touchdowns in the last 3 weeks, so he's really taken away. So I think McCaffrey's the elite play on the Carolina side of things. I mean, you can throw darts here at the wide receivers if you want. Funchess is more your, you know, possession end zone type receiver, but he doesn't really get any yards and he hasn't scored in 3 weeks. And then you got the two speedsters and DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel, and I haven't chose them right. I take Samuel, Moore goes off. I take Moore, Samuel goes off. So I'll make sure to let everyone in chat know on Sunday morning which guy I take, and they can roster the other one. They both have explosive upside, but it's tough. Detroit's a pretty good defense too, so I don't see either of them really doing much. It's more of a, like I said, a dart throw punt play.
Yep, yeah, I think I'm with you there. I think Carolina, you're basically hoping to guess right. I think you can stack Cam and McCaffrey, but I would be, I'm just higher on McCaffrey. I think the question all along has been, was he going to get the touchdowns with Cam choosing to, or the team choosing to let Cam run it in from 5 yards and in, and 4 rushing touchdowns in the last 3 weeks lets you know what their plan is right now. Okay, so Tampa Bay heads into New York. Another game with pretty significant DFS implications here. Fitzpatrick, you know, the highest owned quarterback for cash games on FanDuel last week, comes out, gets 400 yards, doesn't manage to be a part of any touchdowns, and does manage to be a part of 3 turnovers in spite of a 70% completion rate. I'm pretty sure you guys probably talked about him for cash games yesterday. The rest of these guys on Tampa Bay, you know, Mike Evans is a guy we held our nose in and played in cash games, didn't work out. DeSean Jackson had 8 targets last week. What are we seeing from Tampa Bay right now that's DFS relevant?
I definitely think you can go back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. It was kind of funny. I was sitting in the stands at the NASCAR race on Sunday, and I just was like, okay, I'm going to check, because I played Ryan Fitzpatrick in cash. I'm like, I'm just going to check the scores here and see how my cash game lineup's doing. I didn't get into the box score. I only looked at the score, seeing that they scored 3 points, and immediately shut my phone off and concentrated on the race. I got back to the hotel room after and seen that he threw for 400 yards and still hit cash value. It was just like absolutely thrilled. I don't think he's going to get unlocked. I don't see 400 yards again, but I do see another productive day where he's going to throw it 40 plus times. And I don't think he's going to get unlucky when it comes to the touchdown. I can see 1 to 2 touchdowns this week. I didn't get to see the game. I've only seen a few highlights, but there were some fumbles in there that kind of, you know, some run bad on the touchdown side of things.
Oh, definitely. Right. Evans dropped one just sitting in the end zone. Jacquizz Rodgers had a fumble. It was a total mess. And Fitzpatrick, of course, himself had the fumble too. Fitzpatrick, by the way, you're not projecting him for 400 yards. He's got 400 yards passing in 4 of his 5 games as a starter this season. Just truly unreal. And, you know, if he really actually comes back And like, I guess I'm still just waiting for him to turn into a pumpkin, because quarterbacks tend not to just pass for 6 yards per attempt for their entire career and then get into their mid-30s and start looking like us and start turning into 400 true talent, 400 yard a game guys, because again, none of those have ever existed in the history of mankind. So we'll see on Fitzpatrick, but I'm still pretty high on him. And yeah, I'm loving the story. So we'll continue to keep an eye on it. On the running side for Tampa Bay, Peyton Barber, looks like he'll probably play this week. Is currently questionable, but was limited in practice. Between him and Rodgers, it's basically a timeshare, an unassuming timeshare. Rodgers 8 targets last week. Barber had none, but Barber did have the 13 carries, and Rodgers filling more in that theoretic role. So I think if you're going to play either of those guys, you're doing it just based on GPP speculation.
Yeah.
The Giants side, though, I mean, Tampa Bay, we've talked about it all season. They're basically capable of turning anyone into the 2011 Patriots. Eli has been pretty garbage so far this season, but you got guys like Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham Jr. on this team. I mean, you're paying absolute top dollar, but can we see doing this in any formats this week?
Yeah, I mean, Barkley just, I think he's definitely in play. He's got the second most targets among running backs this season, and the game script kind of feels like it's going to be good, even though last week didn't really work out. You know, he got 12 fantasy points. That's not really enough for what you're paying for him. It was Beckham that went off, so it kind of seems like you don't want to pair those two guys together. You don't want to pay up for both of them together, because it's like one or the other on any given week. This week it really feels like a Barkley, even though Tampa Bay's been a sieve through the air, I think they can get Barkley more involved coming off last week. I think because of that performance last week, his ownership may be a little bit down. So if you're thinking that Ezekiel Elliott is going to be the highest owned running back this week, I think pivoting to Barkley in GPPs makes a lot of sense. I'm even considering him in cash games just because of his elite pass catching ability, especially on DraftKings. And then Beckham for me is going to be probably on the GPP side of things. And it's mostly, I mean, he's getting the opportunity. He's had 10 plus targets and it looks like about 7 straight games. He's only caught 4 of 11 last week. He got those 2 touchdowns. So the catch rate really hasn't been there consistently, but it's more to do with Eli just, you know, not being consistent himself.
Yes.
It has me more on the GPP side of things for Beckham.
Yeah, I mean, Beckham Jr. at this point, one game this season with fewer than double-digit targets, and that game he had 9. So yeah. We know the Giants' plan is Beckham is just incredibly highly targeted. We know that when Eli's feeling on, he's going to get those 140 yards, possibly a touch games. And when it's not clicking, he can get 4 receptions too. So just know that that's what you're signing up for. And I think you won't be too dissatisfied either way. Other notes in this game, Evan Ingram, you know, back-to-back weeks now as a pretty relevant part of the passing game, still cheap, 14 targets total in his last 2 games. He's probably another guy in that big tight end potpourri that you can just pick from and just hope for the best. So good luck to you. God bless you if that's the direction you decide to go, and you can hope for the best. Okay, so Pittsburgh heads in and goes against Jacksonville for our last 1 o'clock game here. Jacksonville, notoriously tough passing defense, but right now James Conner has been practicing in full all week, still 8,200, and still a guy that was just week in, week out, when he was getting his carries, putting up 26 fantasy points or more. James Conner, cash game play this week, or are we going to wind up looking in different directions here?
You know, Doug mentioned it yesterday with the sites, maybe using the matchup a little bit too much in the pricing, thinking that he's maybe a little bit too cheap here. 7,200 on DK and 8,200 on FanDuel. He's a little more expensive on FanDuel, like one spot higher, I guess. But
right.
Jacksonville's been a tough defense against the rush, 6th in fantasy points against, 7th in DVOA there. But Connor's, he's getting like 88% of the touch shares on the season. That kind of changed a little bit last week. They did try and get Jalen Samuels and Stephen Ridley a little bit more involved. I think that was just to, you know, give him a little bit of rest there. But
yes.
I think with his usage...
Well, also he was banged up, right? So he
makes
was...
a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. And Connor banged up in that game. So, you know, I think that explains a decent amount of why that target share was pushed elsewhere. And listen, when you're going up against a team like Jacksonville, you must do something, right? So you can't just look and be like, well, they're a good defense, so we're not going to pass or run. And like, you have to try something. Jacksonville, much better passing defense with Bowie and Ramsey. They're just really, really strong and really, like, you know, Smith-Schuster and Brown normally capable, you know, between the two of them of opening it up against really any duo or set of corners, because you know, you figure you only have one corner capable of trailing one, and then the other one is going to be left to do what they want. You know, Jacksonville, one of the very few teams that can credibly cover both of those threats on the outside, and that means that Pittsburgh's probably going to have to get creative. And so I think Connor in line for a pretty solid game here. Right now, you know, Vegas sees Pittsburgh as being in fine shape here. Its game has a 46.5 total, with them being 5.5 point favorites. So ultimately, Jacksonville still just not a great team, not a good offense. And that probably means that Pittsburgh's going to have the ball in their hands a decent amount. But on the Jacksonville side, I mean, you know, again, I don't want to be in the position of trying to guess right on these wide receivers, although D.D. Westbrook did have the 10 targets. But I want to get your opinion on Leonard Fournette. I mean, I don't think we wrote him up for cash games, but the guy had 29 touches in that Indy game. He had 24 carries for 53 yards, but he had 29 targets or 29 overall touches, did get 109 yards and 2 touchdowns. Are we sleeping on Fournette? I mean, there was a time, Chris, where we were happily paying $8,500 to $8,800 for him on FanDuel, and now he's $7,600. Granted, they're 5.5 point dogs, and they don't really have a lot to do elsewhere, but can you see Fournette as being ownable in any formats here?
From an ownership pivot standpoint, I can see him as a GPP play because he's going to get the volume now that he's back and he's healthy, air quotes. But myself, Pittsburgh, that's the one place they have actually been very good this year is against the run, fourth in fantasy points against running back so far this year. So I'm not really looking to him in cash games for sure. But like I said, as an ownership pivot, I think you can definitely use him. He's very talented. He's going to get the touches both on the ground and through the air. But I don't think the game flow is going to be there for them. Pittsburgh's a better team. I think Pittsburgh's going to have the lead, and Jacksonville is going to have to throw. So myself, for GPPs, I'm going to be going more of the Bortles-Westbrook route myself.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think Westbrook, you know, very, very cheap right now. I wouldn't be surprised to see people take a stab there, coming off a 10-target week against Indy and a 6-target week the week before that, but not really doing a whole lot with it. And so the price has stayed down, and he could have stayed off radars as well. So, yeah, that's a good little tidbit, good thing to keep an eye on. Okay, so heading over to the 4 o'clock games now. The first one we've got listed is Denver going in to play the Chargers. This is another game that has some fantasy weirdness. Of course, Denver vacating a wide receiver. Also at the same time, adding back Freeman into the running game. Just generally a really, really weird team. And then on the Chargers side of the ball, you have two fantasy studs in Gordon and Allen. What are you seeing in this game that we should start with?
Melvin Gordon right off the top is, you know, just looks like the game flow with San Diego, the Chargers at home, 7-point favorites, and it's gone up to 7.5 actually here in the last couple days. So definitely Melvin Gordon is the top guy for me. I'm not really worried about Eckler. He does take away some of the touch share, but I mean, he's had 15 plus carries in six straight weeks. He's getting that 4+ targets with...
Yeah, Eckler only touched the ball 3 times last 2 weeks, so I'm with you. Exactly. I'm not worried about Eckler either.
So definitely Melvin Gordon's there for me. Keenan Allen, he's kind of banged up with a hip injury. I'm sure it looks like he's going to play, so he's not going to... He was only limited in practice on Thursday, so I'm sure he's going to get probably a full practice in on Friday, today, and get back in there. But he just hasn't been as productive as, you know, we've been used to. He scored a touchdown in week one, scored a touchdown last week. Those are his only 2 touchdowns of the year.
Touchdown sandwich.
Yeah. So not really looking to the pass game so much. It feels like a Melvin Gordon week for me on that side of the ball. And then the Denver side of things, coming from behind, it feels like this is maybe a spot we want to get Emmanuel Sanders in there. Definitely okay. The top guy in the passing game. He seems to be getting his targets outside of the KC game where he was only targeted 4 times. But other than that, he's had 7+ targets in all but 2 games this year, which is weird because the 2 games where he didn't get those 7+ targets were in excellent matchups against KC and Oakland. So, but coming from behind, I think they're definitely going to be coming from behind on the road this week, and they're going to have to pass a lot. So really Sanders is the only one I'm looking to. And Cortland Sutton, I think, is going to draw the toughest coverage there on the outside, provided Sanders is going to be in the slot. So definitely Sanders for me in this game.
Yeah, and I'm out on Sutton anyway, to be honest. Like, people wanted to read the tea leaves there, us included, and say, well, hey, Thomas is out of the picture, so Cortland Sutton is like thereby going to come in and get 10 targets. I think that we make this mistake so often in DFS, especially in the football related thing, where in football has a very peculiar way of doing this, where teams, on one hand, they're choosing to throw the ball to a guy a certain amount of times, right? They're looking for him as the number one overall read. But on the other end, you also just have to be able to get open enough times to get those kind of targets. And oftentimes on a team, there's a reason a guy was a second, third, fourth, fifth wide receiver or whatever. So it's not like Demaryius Thomas, for whatever his flaws might be, is still a dynamic, big, playmaking wide receiver, right? And Sutton, he might have all the potential in the world. We might be able to see the big games coming from him in the future, but we have plenty of games now where like six targets, one catch, six targets, two catches, five targets, one catch. Like Sutton can just have bad games and he's still cheap, but I don't think that's the direction I'm going to go. If there's something I'm excited about in the Denver passing game, it's actually Jeff Heurman. Heurman comes out and seemed to be the big answer when it came to Thomas no longer being a part of things. Going up against Houston, 11 targets, 10 catches, 83 yards, and a touchdown. He's seen decent target share, actually, over the course of the season. Had his own issues with conversion, and that's just going to happen on this Denver team. Keenum's just not been very accurate overall. But Heurman, I think, is another guy that should enter that discussion of the short list of, you know, generally bad but could possibly be good tight ends that we're considering. And you mentioned Keenan Allen. I'm also modestly high on him. I do think 9 and 10 targets each of the last 2 weeks, assuming he gets the all clear, definitely a GPP guy at 7,600, you know, probably a true talent, $8,200 receiver when healthy. So you probably could scoop up a little value there. But definitely a game to keep an eye on where there should be some fantasy implications. Okay, moving on. We got Oakland going in to Arizona. It's another 4:05 game. Oakland just been basically a crime against humanity in all facets of the game this season, both from real football and from DFS perspective. The only guy I'm seeing there, especially with Cooper out of the picture, is probably Jared Cook. Other than that, I feel like Oakland's in that skip category. But Arizona, Chris, we got David Johnson, 12% cash game ownership last week. New offensive coordinator there, albeit not for last week, but over the last few weeks. 28 touches, 85 receiving yards, 98 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns. Is this the return of DJ? Do we see is this the big DJ week where he finally gets as much ownership as he was having early in the season?
I could see his ownership definitely, and I talked about it a little bit yesterday that I like him in cash games, kind of in that tier just below your the Kamara, Barkley, Elliott range. I think his price is going to go up into the 8K range on both sites next week, so this is maybe your last chance to get on him. I think the ownership is going to be there, but it does look like they're using him like vintage, when he was rolling there last year, year before. You know, passing the ball a lot, that's really what we wanted to see, and I own him a lot in season-long fantasy, and this is just like a sigh of relief to finally see them using him the way he should be used. 21 carries last week, 9 targets. He caught 7 of them. He's like, you know, no offense to Larry Fitzgerald at his age right now, but David Johnson could be their best receiver on the team. So getting him more involved just makes sense. His upside is through the roof, and I think his floor now is safe enough where we can definitely use him in cash games as well. So he's definitely the player on that Arizona side of things that I'm looking to, and really no one else. Maybe a punt tight end with Ricky Seals-Jones at his price, just the way the week and the lineup construction is working out. If we're going up with running backs, and even if you want to go with a expensive wide receiver in there as well, Seals-Jones is very cheap, under $3K on DraftKings. So his targets have been, you know, kind of up and down, but you know, even if we can get, you know, 5 catches, 50 yards, I mean, 10 points is kind of, it's a little over 3 times value. I'll definitely take that if it helps me get to 2 or 3 elite players at the running back wide receiver position.
Yeah, I always have a difficult time with those tight ends on DraftKings because in my mind knows that playing a cheap tight end can work out because it enables like real plays at all those other positions, and my heart just does not want to press the submit button when I see one of those guys who gets like 4 targets a week in my lineup. So I'm with you there logically. When it comes to me having the guts to actually do it, I guess we'll see. Interesting to note for this game too, the Cardinals actually favored by 5.5 points, which is not going to be a situation they find themselves in very often going forward. And if you think that, you know, if you are wondering when the best time to play David Johnson is for the rest of the season, I have a really hard time believing that this would not be it, because it definitely seems to be finding his legs finally. And sub $8,000 price tag, to your point, you're going to see big ownership and you are going to see probably a pretty good game and a subsequent price increase. I don't want to dismiss Larry Fitzgerald too much here either. 10 targets last week, 12 targets a week before that in San Francisco. Again, they're still sorting out having a new offensive coordinator, and while Fitzgerald is pretty darn old at this point, he can still catch balls that are thrown in his direction. And I think, you know, you could do a whole lot worse than a guy who's ultimately hauled in 14 passes on 22 targets in the last 2 weeks for a sub $6,000 price tag. So, you know, while I still think there are probably more attractive options with more upside, we've talked about many of them, Galladay, Corey Davis, you know, in that same $6,000-ish price range to where you just might not need to do it with Fitzgerald. But I think if he winds up in your lineups, you don't want to, and even Amari Cooper in a similar price range. But if Jones or Fitzgerald winds up in your lineup, then I think you probably can live with it. So definitely something I'm going to be keeping an eye out for as well.
Final thought on that game. We haven't really touched a whole bunch on defense, but Arizona is one that I'm looking at this week. Oakland does have the lowest projected points out of all the games in the slate. And Arizona's right up there. I think they're sixth in total sacks with 29 so far this season. And then I like to look at adjusted sack rate as well. And they're fourth on their defensive line in adjusted sack rate, while Oakland is 25th, and they're giving up a lot of sacks. So definitely one of the defenses I'm looking at this week. And I think correlation play, I like pairing him with. If you're playing David Johnson, I like pairing him with the Arizona defense as well.
All right. Hey, hot fire coming out of Chris Terrell. Coming in late, dude. You still got it after 45 minutes of podcasting. Well done. Stamina on this guy. All right. So let's get into the final game on the slate. It's a short slate this week, by the way. Six teams on a bye. So, you know, the pickings are going to be slimmer than usual. But I still think we've come up with a lot of pretty good plays. And right now, lineups are looking decent. But Philly comes in, heads up against New Orleans. Highest total on the slate for good reason. You got New Orleans at home. It's a dome game, so in a weekend where weather could be questionable. I'm looking outside at about 4 inches of snow here in New England, so I know that weather could be a concern across the NFL this week as the weather starts to get a little colder. This game is the highest total, and it has some pretty explosive offensive players. Where to even begin? Why don't we just start with the Saints, and then we'll get to the Eagles after that.
Yeah, they're giving the Saints a lot of credit here. They are, we talked about it in the recap podcast last week where I actually ranked the Saints number one team in the NFL when looking at the big four right now. And they're giving them a lot of credit because they're up to 8-point favorites now. And the total went from 54 to 56. So personally, it feels like New Orleans is going to get ahead, which kind of makes the running backs a little bit murky. And Doug talked about it a little bit, but Mark Ingram seems to get in these spots and get the rushes when they get ahead early. So kind of, for me, makes Kamara more of a GPP play. And I love the price on Ingram. I mean, if that's going to be the case, they're going to get up by a touchdown or so, even in the second half of the game, and he's going to get 13 to 15 carries again. I think Ingram at his price makes sense for GPPs if the game flow does work out that way. But for me, Michael Thomas is always in play. He gets a lot of target share. He catches a phenomenal amount of the balls. So his safety, the floor is definitely there. He's at 89% catch rate, and there's like no one else even close to him in that regard. And he's just under 1,000 yards. So I can definitely see another, you know, he may not get the 10-plus unless this game really turns into a shootout, which it could. But definitely think that he's the safest play in this game.
Sure, yeah. Kamara very saved by the touchdowns last week. And, you know, you don't want to take away the credit there too much. I mean, the guy's now has multiple touchdowns in three straight weeks, so that could be just a feature of playing Alvin Kamara these days. But guys that become very, very touchdown dependent tend to have more ups and downs than guys who aren't. So, you know, with a gun to my head, if I had to pick between like Kamara and Ezekiel Elliott this week, I would take Ezekiel Elliott for a cheaper price point and what I believe to be just better job security. You know, he's just not competing. I mean, typically on these teams where you've got just multiple guys near $9,000 price points and those guys have a lot of competition, you kind of need things to go in your favor in order for it to pay off. So actually for me, a lot of great players on the Saints, a lot of guys you can get excited about for DFS purposes. I think the way I'll be deploying them is just picking two of them, probably Breeze and somebody, and just hoping that I pick the right pair of guys for big tournaments and kind of moving on from them from there, as kind of odd as it sounds with such a dynamic team in a game with such a high total.
Would you take a stab with Tre'Quan Smith? You know, they brought Dez Bryant in. He's out for the season now. Cameron Meredith's out for the season. Do you think at 4K on DK that it's worth taking a punt with Tre'Quan Smith in this game, in a shootout type game?
I mean, it could be. You know, he falls kind of in that Cortland Sutton category where it's like, I can see all the reasons why he would get more targets. I like that he's already being targeted on some level. And I just don't have any super high degree of confidence unless I can hear from a coach like he's going to play every snap and we're going to target him 10 times or something, which, you know, coaches never tend to give us that level of information. I just don't think I would want to get caught in that speculation game too much. I mean, again, so it's always a price consideration thing, right? If playing him at the bare minimum prices means I can get two really high floor guys instead of 1.5, then I'll do it. But yeah, I would rather not probably. So,
okay.
So yeah, and that's just my...
My only reasoning behind that is just Philadelphia is absolutely banged up in the secondary. Like, their corners this week, they're running out there. Rasul Douglas, Avante Maddox, and Chandon Sullivan. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I've ever heard of any of those guys before this week with all the guys that are out for the season now, injured for their secondary. So that's the only reason I bring up Traquan Smith and then those other two wide receivers being out. I think there could be some opportunity there, but like you said, it's kind of a dart throw whether he's going to
I don't think it's outrageous, and maybe Doug will disagree with me on that. It's just like a kind of a – it's kind of just a core belief I hold about playing DFS in the NFL, where as people who play fantasy sports in general, we can learn certain names and we can see what's going on, but only really in the games themselves, right? Where the coaches have so much more information than we do. And so back to the Courtland Sutton example – if you were a coach on the Denver coaching staff, you could have been sitting there looking at that and being like, what? Why do these guys think Sutton's, we're going to throw the ball 10 times to him now? Like, that's never been the plan. Like, we just don't see him that way or whatever. And I think we just can't be privy to those conversations, and those questions aren't really being asked, and coaches aren't really incentivized to share that because it just kind of gives away, shows their hand. So I think I always just prefer to see it first. And, you know, sometimes that makes you a week late, and sometimes you're just in great shape, right? But, you know, missing out, like if you look at the course of the season, guys in that very, very similar situation, some of them have worked out, like Marquez Valdes-Scantling comes to mind. But in that case, we had probably more injury, more target share to spread around, and a better track record, like already 5 or 6 targets a game. And a lot of these other guys that people have wanted to play, you know, John Ross, Courtland Sutton, Willie Snead, like the list goes on and on. When there's been opportunity, DJ Moore, opportunity opens up and it doesn't necessarily go where the DFS community consensus thinks it will. So,
yep.
So yeah, I suppose we'll see is my general take there. But over on Philly, talked about Zach Ertz, like the guy's really expensive, but in terms of tight ends right now, he's in an actual league of his own. 16 targets last week against Dallas, turns that into 14 catches, 145 yards and 2 touchdowns. Just absolutely ridiculous upside for the tight end position, to say nothing of doing that on a $7,600 salary. Are we going to play Ertz for cash games? Can you make any sense of the wide receiver situation now that they have both Jeffrey and Tate? What are you seeing on Philly for me?
I don't see him viable for cash games just because of his price and the way that the running back position is really shaken out this week. I haven't been able to make a lineup where I can get Ertz plus two of the elite running backs in there. I think for GPPs, a lot of people maybe are thinking the same way with lineup construction this week. It just feels that way when making lineups on both the sites. So I think Ertz, if you want to maybe pivot off some of the wide receivers and even with some of the big running backs, you can start your lineups with like a Wentz-Ertz stack and go from there and see what you can build around those two guys. I think the ownership might be a bit lower. But Ertz's floor, if you can make it work in cash, he's definitely cash viable this week because he's fourth in the league, wide receivers included, in 11.1 targets per game. So the floor is just sky high right now for Ertz. And I think the other, you know, the receivers on that team, I talked about it yesterday. Wentz is definitely my favorite cash game quarterback right now in this game because I think Philly's going to be trailing. I think they're going to have to throw a lot. We could see 40-plus pass attempts from Wentz. He's an accurate quarterback. He's got a lot of receivers to get it to, plus Ertz on the tight end. But Jeffrey and Tate, I'm more inclined to go with, you know, pair Tate with Wentz in cash games and Jeffrey more on the GPP side of things for me.
Okay. Yeah, I think Tate ultimately emerges as the possession receiver there once they all really get on the same page. So yeah. I definitely feel you there. And the Philly running game, just nothing that can even really be said. They're taking the little league approach of everyone gets a turn. Smallwood, Clement, Josh Adams, each having 5 or more touches last week. Totally unplayable. You can ignore the price point. It just doesn't even matter when they're spreading it around that much. But hey, Chris, I think we have actually done it. 54 minutes in here, covered all the games on the main slate. Our 50-minute guitar solo is now over, and we can bring Doug back, hopefully, God willing, for the game-by-game breakdown next week, so I don't have to do all the research prior to it. But I think it went pretty well. How are you feeling?
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun, man.
That's it, dude. All right, well, let's get out of here then. That's our Week 11 game-by-game breakdown. As always, you can head on over to dfsr.com. You can read our written articles if you want more in-depth takes. You can also check out our NBA content as well. And as always, if you go on over to dfsr.com/deals, you can see our podcast-only rate of $24.95 a month and that free 7-day trial just to get your beak wet. So thanks for joining me, Chris, and we'll see you guys all in that members-only chat come game time on Sunday.
Yeah, good luck out there, everyone.